やってみよう。
You with the positive mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, guests, concepts, help you lead a more positively minded life. In the studio with me, an incredible combo, Johnna Valerio, Lisa Arnone, helping us research beforehand and being as our, we now have external researchers too working on program ideas and information for me. You know, every morning when I wake up, I ask myself questions. I do have this little fog-like time. Must be maybe 3 minutes. I kind of wake up and I say to myself, what are going to be the first words I speak today? I'm curious. Since I've made such a living off my voice, I hear my voice a lot, you know. I hear it and I say, what'll be the first thing I say? What's it going to be? And will it in any way set the tone for what happens for the rest of the day? You know, will the first thing I say? It's an interesting concept. Comes from something with Benjamin Zander. You know Benjamin Zander, if you haven't heard it, on TED.com. Diana Feist just sent it around recently. Benjamin Zander, Z-A-N-D-E-R, does a wonderful little thing about classical music. And in this story, he tells a story about a woman who was on her way to Auschwitz with her brother, a young brother. And she noticed that he had lost his shoes. And she criticized him, and she said, how could you be so stupid? Anyway, they were separated. The boy died. She came out of it, and she said, the last thing I ever said to him was, how could you be so stupid? And I swore to myself then that I would never, ever say anything to anybody in parting that I wouldn't let be the last words that I would like to be there. So that kind of set a trigger going in my mind. And I said, so what do I want to wake up in the morning? How do I want it? What's the first thing I want to say? How's that going to set something? What's the first thing I want said to me? Right? Imagine you wake up somebody, and the first thing you say is, you know, hurry up, you got to get to work. Instead of welcome, you know, or something like that. Of course, if you have children, it's different, right?
When you have children, it's, I think, every day an opportunity to, they wake up, they're happy. I'm happy to say, good morning. It's time to get up.
So that's this one of the advantages of having children, is children tend to grow up happy, right? They tend to wake up happy. And this kind of energetic feel, is that right, John? Do you get that from your kids? This kind of good morning, you know, and this kind of jump up at you?
Sometimes, but sometimes, you know, especially if they have to get up early to go to school, they're not so happy to get up early sometimes.
Then
so
you have to get them up.
I try to be mindful, you know, to be a little bit like, good morning, honey, you know, a little bit, because I know it's hard. I know
so
it's
you really want to wake them up gently. So we have this experience of with children, knowing they have the power to help us get lifted, and we have the power to put them through a good or a miserable day. We don't want to yell at the kids first thing. Get up, you lazy bum. Right? Okay, but if that's the case, then what do we say to ourselves? What do we say to each other? Imagine that your bed is an old. By the way, this is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. Today we're talking about exasperation, frustration, genuflection, and circumcision. Stay with us. Going to be interesting. So what is a genuflection? How many of you know genuflection? I know one percentage of you do. You genuflect. It means lowering your head and kneeling on one knee. When I was a kid, we were taught to genuflect because I went to Catholic school. We didn't know exactly how a genuflect worked or why you genuflected, but it was kind of like you're paying attention to God and you're kneeling on one knee and you're lowering your head just to take a pause. But a genuflection has value because it means pause. And the older you get, the harder it is to genuflect because you have to kneel on one knee, not really touch the ground, and get up, meaning a bigger pause. I would like there to be bigger pauses in life. So a genuflection is, in a way, my way of saying I would like to take a pause, to stop everything for a moment, so that I honor the next thing I do, which could be going to sleep. You land in bed, you're going to sleep. That's why people read books, watch televisions, do things to get their mind away. You don't want to be worrying about something when you go to bed, because it makes for a less restful sleep, it seems. So we have this, if you could take genuflection as a way of honoring yourself, we're looking at this, and we're going to get to exasperation in a minute, but let's talk about this idea. Let's say that you wanted to honor yourself right now. Let's say you wanted to change your mood right now. Could you take this minute and figure out a way or find a way that you could be quiet and allow the following thing to take place? Imagine you're going to let a smile grow. Now, here's what you're going to do. Wherever you are, keep your face just the way it is. Let a smile grow. It's going to take 30 seconds. Let the smile come on. Now imagine you're tracing the muscles of a smile. You know, think about these pictures that we all have up on the wall that we keep around. It's always got something with a smile. Think about when you get in front of a camera, people are always saying, smile. You know, they're saying, give us a smile. Let's see a smile. Why? Because the smile communicates something. So imagine you let the muscles on your face right now form a smile. This is an idea that Lisa brought to me. She says this is a way of taking a pause that she does and recommends to her patients that they do, not because you're trying to be artificially happy, but because by forming the smile on your face, you actually lighten your load. It's your own genuflection. Let's do it now. Take the moment and let yourself smile. Let it come on. Let the muscles form. Go ahead. I'm watching, Jana. It comes on gradually. There it goes. There it goes. There it goes. They said the difference between a real smile and a fake smile. When people have fake smiles, it doesn't corner in the eye. Real smiles go all the way up to the muscles of your eyes. So take your smile up to the muscles of your eye. And this is one of the easy tools we have of taking a pause, because we need pauses. Which brings us to exasperation. Exasperation by definition. What would you say exasperation is?
Exasperation is to feel irritated and annoyed, but be unable to communicate effectively, to communicate in response to it.
So there's a timing mechanism in it. Exasperation. There's an annoyance, an anger you feel, but you don't want to express it. You don't want to blurt it out because something is happening and it's a matter of timing and you feel like you're being put upon time-wise. People have to deal with exasperation all the time. But it gets to a point in relationships where you hear people exasperated with each other. And it's one of the worst sounds I ever hear. You know, when people are talking and then their mates go, pfft. They make these funny sounds, like, you know, disgusting, like, ugh. Imagine that being a part of your life. I can't imagine it being a part of mine. Exasperation, imagine. So what does it mean? It means, if you love somebody who gets exasperated a lot, it means their sense of timing hasn't caught up. It means they're feeling something, they're trying to process something, and they feel that they have to come up with a solution faster than they could put together in their own minds. Maybe there's somebody who thinks in precision, like a great artist, who thinks that every piece of a work of art should be, you know, perfect. So they think that way, and then they come by, and then you present them with something, and they want to organize it, they want to put it together in their brain, they feel the pressure of you wanting an answer. Like if you say to them, what would you like for dinner? And they can't give you the answer right away. And you're waiting because you have the place on the phone that you're going to call to order the dinner. And they can't give you the answer right away, and you get exasperated because they're taking too long. It's a matter of timing. Timing to process. Is it always? And sometimes the timing is checking your own reaction. So imagine the following. Imagine you have a carpet, a nice light-colored carpet in your home, and you just cleaned it. You just took out that carpet cleaner and you cleaned it down and not only vacuumed but shampooed it, and it was absolutely fantastic. And your son comes running in the room, forgetting to take off his shoes. He's got mud on his shoes and he runs right across the carpet. And you look at it, and you want to kill him. And some piece of you feels this, but it's his birthday. See how I'm changing the story as we go along? And he's about to have a birthday party, which is why you clean the rug so that people can come over and see it. And you feel this frustration, but you don't want to ruin his birthday. You don't want to yell at him. So you feel this annoyance. You feel this frustration. You kind of hold it there, and he may even notice it. But you don't want him to notice it. You want to kind of let it pass. Exasperation. Right? You're kind of lost with it. Imagine you ask your parents for something when you're a kid, and they won't give it to you. Exasperation. You can't say you're angry. Mom, I want to go out tonight at 2 a.m. to go to this rock concert, and I need you to give me $50 to get in. And your mom, no, you're only 12. Right? And why can't I do it? What's the matter with this repressive society I live in? Someday I'm going to grow up and be able to go to any concert I want at 2 o'clock in the morning. Exasperation, and you sit in your bed furious and mad and exasperated because you're totally ineffective. Say if you loved somebody who was frequently exasperated, you would see that their frustration is with their inability to process the information in the same time that they expect you want it. So you can say something like, take your time, but that exasperates them more. That means that they think that you think that they're being too slow. So exasperation is a funny thing. It could grow, too. It could grow to a point where eventually, and I've seen this frequently enough, a person in a relationship with somebody who gets easily exasperated stops talking to him. No matter what I say, you're going to get upset. Anything I mention, you're going to get upset. Right? So I'm going to stop talking to you. And I've seen this where people stonewall each other. What a terrible way to be. How do you deal with it? What do you do? If you're a couple who's in love, here's my proposal. Here's my deal. If you love somebody and you have this mutually acceptable love, what do you think of the idea that if you talk to each other on a telephone or whenever you talk to each other, you must end the conversation with, I love you? Now, doesn't that sound simplistic? Doesn't that sound stupid? How could you do such a thing? How could you do it if you're in a room with people who might overhear you do it? Okay, so let's say there's an exception. But let's say at the end of every conversation, you seriously considered saying to your partner, I love you. Now, you know, parents say it to their kids all the time, and the kids hate hearing it. They can't stay. I don't want to hear you love me. Stop. It's as if you're saying that to restrict me in some way. But what if it was an agreement? What if it was a real courageous agreement? I have to say I love you. You have to say I love you. And if we don't say it, then we know we got something to deal with. So you might say, I really can't say I love you at this moment because I don't feel that. And we'll talk about it later. And you would honor that. Well, thank you very much. We will talk about it later. Armand DeMille here with A Positive Mind. Just giving you something to think about. We'll be, of course, taking your calls to talk about this exasperation. I mean, kids get exasperated with their parents. Parents get exasperated with their kids. But people getting exasperated with each other, that's a thing. That's a thing. What would you do? So, if you have a big kind of inside, a tenderness, a love, a feeling for the other person, can it be shown? Can it be seen? I don't know. This is Armand DeMille with you. Our telephone number here, by the way, is 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900.
So I think the challenge with exasperation is, we were discussing, when can you stop yourself from having the response?
The exasperation, the puff, response.
Right, the puff of air, the...
What did I call it? I called it cannons, silent cannons on the relationship battlefield.
Right.
Right? Somebody should make that into a poster. The silent cannons on a relationship battlefield. It's the cannon that fires, but it's got no shells in it, but it's certainly got a puff of smoke.
And there seem to be scenarios where I could imagine it's easier to not respond with exasperation, like when you were talking about the boy whose birthday it was. And so in that instance, you can stop, pause, reach down inside of you and say, it's just a rug, it's his birthday, and let it go. But it's hard to do, and so it's hard to do all the time. But it seems like it would be a good skill to develop, to be able to understand the exasperation and then temper it with other feelings that you have about the person.
Well, okay, so here comes the question. Do certain people get more exasperated than other people? The answer is yes.
Then why would that be?
I rarely feel exasperated. You know why? Because if I get angry, I say it. And I have this kind of quick path. But I'm not as intricate as other people who do get exasperated because they're following a web of thought that may be far more complete than mine. They may want to be more accurate than I am. You know, another problem here, I remember Davina Sima once brought me a program about, she said, we've got to talk about cell phones. And what's happened with cell phones and text? How has it affected our communication? And here was her question. Have cell phones become a leash? Is that your leash to another person? Do you use your cell phone to call out to keep people on a leash? When you get the call inside, you know, do you look down? Do you diss a person? Is this their way of reaching you? Now, you say you call your kids, right, Lisa?
Yes, I do.
You call them, right? And how do they feel when you call them?
They don't want to talk. They're busy.
They don't want to hear from you, right?
Yes.
But you call them for your sake.
I call them because I want to hear their voices, yes.
Because it's your leash.
Yes.
That's why you got them a phone.
Yes.
All right. And you text them also?
Yes, I do.
Do they text you back?
Texting, it goes better, yes.
What goes better?
It seems I'll get more of a response with a text than a phone call.
Because there's something in the phone call that may convey something that is not, they don't want to convey. Whereas in text, you could hide a whole bunch of stuff. You know what I mean? Like right now, you could write back if you're feeling, if you're crying, and somebody goes, just want to know how you are, but you didn't want to get your mother involved in why you're crying. You write back, I'm fine, Mom. Hope, how are things by you? So texting is an easy way of getting away with it.
Yes.
Right?
And it's more direct, too. To the point.
It's to the point. It's missing a whole bunch of things like passions. You can't hear exasperation on a text.
No. Isn't that nice? No, you can't.
So that's why I think exasperated people like to text. Because they can, it doesn't get conveyed. But the other thing about people who get exasperated is how complete their communications are when they do communicate. Like when they send you an email, they send you a letter. It's usually a complete thing. It's thought out. Whereas people who are not that exasperated tend to blurt stuff out. And they have very little to really organize. In fact, I've seen, oh my God, there are people who have loose thumbs. You know, I mean, really loose. You know, loose lips sink ships was an expression during the Second World War where they warned people not to talk about things related to where you're going to be stationed. Well, loose thumbs. Loose thumbs and loose emails. I mean, how many emails have you sent that you wish you had never sent? How many texts do you think that you've sent that you just kind of wish you never pushed that send button? It's holding back, especially for people who tend to blurt out their anger, holding it back. I had one friend who went to her her patient, and she said to her patient, listen, instead of sending this email to your husband or wife, she said, send it to me. Don't send it. Don't send what you want to say to them. Send it to me. Because you're going to feel better pushing the send button. Send it to me and let me take a look at what it is that you really want to say. And it was just so much of a relief for him to not send these things that he wanted to send out there.
Well, again, you're talking about inserting a pause.
Good.
Having the moment where you, between what you say and what you do. You know, don't act on it.
You're talking like a puppy. Insert your pause.
Well, the pause can also be between what you think and
your
what you
pause,
say.
Your pause.
Oh, my pause, yeah.
Your pause. You insert your pause. Uh-huh. No, yes, of course. Yes, it is finding any way to put a distance between you and your reaction is good. But having too much of a distance between you and your reaction results in exasperation. Huh. Armand DeMille with you with The Bothered Mind. Today we're talking about exasperation, frustration, genuflection, and circumcision. We're not going to get to all of it today, I'm sure. But we are going to be taking your calls at 212-209-2900 after this break today. So back to the cell phones as a leash. I mean, do you call because you need things? Do you shut off your phone? Do you have a right to have your phone shut off? Is there such a thing as call-free time? How about couples would say to each other, listen, let me shut off the phone. Almost like you need permission nowadays. You know, nowadays if you have I remember a guy who used to have a pager. Before there were cell phones, there were pagers. And I remember him walking down by the East River. And he had two things. He had a bunch of keys. He had a key to everything. Key to his house, key to his garage, key to his office, key to the desk, key to this. In the end, he carried maybe 30 keys. You know what 30 keys feel like? It's a lot of weight. He had that and he had his pager. And he was in chains. He was a prisoner. And he told me, he was a patient of mine, he went down to the river and he threw it all in the East River. The whole thing, the pager, the keys. And he felt free. He felt free. He said it was such an amazing freedom. Sure, it created some inconveniences. What about cell phones? You think there's going to get to be a time when people start taking their phones and just, I'm free of it. I don't have it. You know, the only unfortunate thing, they're probably going to have to wear watches again because nobody wears a watch anymore because they have their cell phones telling them what time it is. And there's enough display everywhere telling them. But what would you be without your phone? How would it be? What about you, Lisa? What about you without your phone? What about you, Jana? If you didn't have your phone, how would it change your life?
Well, I remember back to, you know, a time, well, I mean, we all can, when there were no cell phones, and you definitely did have a you know, you felt freer. Like,
well,
you just had
that's
freedom.
Back then, but right, now. Right. Stay now. Imagine you didn't have it. Sometimes, does it give you more freedom?
Well, personally, I mean, I don't worry about it. If I don't have my cell phone, I don't have it. I don't get stressed out about it.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Oh, you're one of the few. I know people who will travel 10 miles back to their homes to get their phone because they didn't have their phone with them.
Sometimes I'll give myself permission not to pay attention to my cell phone by charging it in another room. And that's, I think that's very freeing, although people get very frustrated, exasperated with me for not being available, not being at the other end.
You have people who call you who get exasperated with you. So I knew a person, passive-aggressive person, she would look down at her phone, and she would, oh no, I actually met a psychiatrist who was in my office once, and he was getting called paged and paged and paged, and he looked at me, and he was a holistic doctor, and I wanted to punch him. He said, that's 142. I said, 142 what? He said, 142 pages by my service that I didn't answer. And he looked at it with a smile. He was like kind of proud of himself that I didn't answer those. I said, how creepy. But that's what people do. They look down at their phones and they can now get their anger expressed by exasperating the other person because you don't answer your phone. How about you call somebody and it always goes to voicemail? Whereas when you used to call them, they would automatically pick it up. Do you think there's a change in your relationship when you're always going to voicemail no matter what you do? I've heard people complain about that. It's always going to disappear. It's always going to, because somebody doesn't want to hear from you because they're mad at you or they're frustrated by you or they're exasperated with you. And they look down at their phone and they see you calling because now it identifies you. It even shows a picture of you. And you push a button and you say, no, I'm not going to talk to you. What power. And then, of course, you have no right to get angry at them. Because you have no way of knowing, were they really busy? Was the dog really eating the homework at that moment? What was really going on? What a funny world we live in. Now with this new system coming out, with the iPhone 5 coming out, it's going to be even more complicated and even more complicated. And I'm not against it. I'll swing with whatever's new. I'll try to see.
Armand, do you think that, so I was listening to you talk about exasperation, that sometimes, you know, the feelings of guilt come after, because if you're exasperated, you take it out on someone you care about, and then you feel guilty after, which is even worse.
A shame. Let's say if you're exasperated, you don't take it out, but you still feel shamed because you weren't able to communicate, because in some way the other person felt the burden of you. You know, people who get exasperated should get embraced. Now, they're not going to let you get too close to them. You can't hold them. But if you think about it, exasperation equals powerlessness. It means I'm not happy with myself. That's why I'm talking like this. So maybe the weapon of trying to use against exasperated people, which is the common weapon, what are you getting so upset about? Maybe instead of that, what we need to do is just love them. Not even try to tell them, but just feel it. Maybe it's time to genuflect, you know? Hey, by the way, just a quick mention. Radio Unnameable, if you haven't seen it yet, Bob Fass at the Film Forum, WBAI, the history of WBAI. It's really kind of amazing. I'm told, I haven't seen it yet, but it's the kind of thing you may want to check into. Hey, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, a little special music for you, and then we will take your telephone calls at 212-209-2900. We'll be right back.
Beautiful.
listening to a group called the 10-Foot Ganja Plant. What other name would you have? With a song called Kneeling at the Feet, from an album called Midnight Landing. Sounds like a combination of New Orleans and the islands. Amazing. Kneeling at the Feet. 212-209-2900. Which brings us, this is Armand DeMille with Lisa Arnone and Gianna Valerio. Which brings us to the whole concept of genuflection. Just because I wanted to bring the word back, genuflection. Why should it be used once? When I was a kid and we were in church, we had no idea when you're supposed to genuflect. You just watched people. So people seemed to know whenever they got out of the pew. That was a funny word, isn't it? Whenever you got out of the pew, you had to genuflect towards the altar. Whenever you crossed the altar, you had to genuflect. Certain prayers, you had to genuflect. And really, in my life, I feel like, you know, I guess if you're, when you bow in honor of somebody, when you bow in their presence, a common custom in Japan, it's a form of genuflection, except you're not going to one knee. A curtsy, I think, is in some form a genuflection, but it's not always one of submission. It is one where you lower yourself to pause yourself. To kind of, you don't have to necessarily make it submission to someone else.
It's a kind of acknowledgement. At least I think that when you're in front of an altar or you're taking a moment to acknowledge the presence of even a curtsy.
The presence of yourself.
Yeah. And
in other words, I'm here. I think we should do it before we go to sleep. I think a genuflection before you get into bed is a very necessary, nice thing. You know, pause. Okay, I'm going to get into bed. I'm going to leave. There's a story I knew about a man who had a hat, and he lived on a farm, and there was a nail outside his home, a nail. And it was, of course, it had a little arbor over it, so it was protected. But he would always take his hat and his coat off, and he would hang it outside the house. And when asked, why do you hang your coat and your hat outside the house? He said, because I don't want to bring anything from the outside world into here. When I come in here, I want to not have that on my back. I don't want to bring it to you either. Maybe a genuflection is a way of keeping yourself. I'd love to see people do that with each other. I imagine there's a whole group of people now running around saying, look, let's try this. We're going to say, we listened to Armand DeMille today. Yes, I want you to say, I love you. We're going to only have I love you now at the end of our conversations. And if we don't, it means we need a discussion or a session, a therapy session with our therapist. And we're going to go to sleep and we're going to think the last words we say are going to be precious and nice. And the first thing we say in the morning when we wake up must be something good, like good morning, darling, like how beautiful it is today, something that goes to the positive. Just start that way. It's a little beginning. I have a habit in the shaving mirror. I look in the mirror, and I always greet myself in the mirror. You know, sometimes I look at my face, and I say, oh, they got you last night. You know, either way, it's like it's a greeting. It's a good place to greet yourself. Do women look in the mirror in the morning? Is that a thing you do? I guess you brush your teeth.
Of course.
Well, I'm thinking about guys and shaving. You know, do you go to that sink and look in that mirror to see yourself?
I do, absolutely, yes.
Do you, Gianna? Do you?
Yes. Yeah. I do, sure.
Sure, you check yourself out. Do you say to yourself anything to yourself? Because, you know, I think people who shave, they spend considerable time looking at themselves. And I don't know if that's a woman's experience as much as it's a shaver's experience.
Well, you have to... I'm always looking to see my first impression of how I look. And then there are things that we do that aren't shaving related, but brushing teeth, maybe putting on cream.
Okay, so there's different kinds of tending, yeah.
Yeah.
212-209-2900. Do you know, what the an Eskimo kiss is? You know the Eskimo kiss, which is when you're pressing the tip of your nose against another person's nose? It's a press. You don't do it back and forth. It's also called a kunik, K-U-N-I-K. And it's a form of expressing affection between family members and loved ones. They kind of greet it. You know, they kind of greet it with each other, and it's a way of greeting. Do you know the what I used to call the bop, which is the dap, D-A-P? Do you know what that is? That's where you have the fist on top of another fist, and you kind of touch it. Now, this was one. It was an acronym for Dignity and Pride, D-A-P. And it was something that was developed during the Vietnam War, and it appears to have been introduced to Western culture through film. But the first beginning of the dap, and that's the tap, you know, this is the one that you saw Barack Obama do with his wife before the 2008 presidential nomination victory speech. He dapped her, right? But you know, it was first in film? In the movie Tarzan Escapes in 1936. Tarzan depicts the gesture with his monkeys as they greet each other. 212-209-2900. The question for the callers is about exasperation. I'm curious about yours and what you feel. And if I haven't turned you on to it, TED.com to see Benjamin Zander, I would also recommend you look at Bonnie Kassler, who talks about bacterium, another fabulous one of the programs, and Nellie McKay, who is singing a beautiful song. 212-209-2900. There's rolling your eyes. And there's the sigh. You know the sigh? You talk to somebody and they go, like that. As a sign of frustration as well. And rolling your eyes. Right? Another sign of frustration. It makes people want to kill each other. It's passive, but it's such a statement of missing affection. I don't feel your love right now, is what it says. But then on the other hand, what you do to try to stop somebody who's exasperated is you start becoming like a little mouse. You become afraid of them. You walk on eggshells. Oh, I'm afraid to bring this up. I'm afraid to call you. I'm afraid to this. I'm afraid to that. And boy, that doesn't feel good when you look at yourself at that way later. I think I'll call her up and say hello. Oh, no, I don't want to call. Jeez, I don't want to get that. I'm too busy to talk to you. I can't do that. There are people I know who have 85 or 90% of their telephone calls on their phone or with each other. That's how much contact they make with each other. That's a nice thing. No, it's not a nice thing. 212-209-2900. Let's take a call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi there. You're on the air.
Hi. This is Beloved from Manhattan.
Hi there.
Hi. I really enjoy listening to your radio talk show. I'm at work, and it's very soothing, especially with all of the bad karma. You were speaking about people not taking your calls, and they look at your phone call and see it's you. It's been happening to me for some time with my two daughters. I love them very much, and I know they're good people, but they don't always answer me, and I've become very annoyed with the way that they've been treating me. And so I felt that it's my responsibility to let them know that I don't appreciate the way that they're treating me. When they call me, I'm on the phone. I can barely give it an opportunity to ring three times. But I know when I call them, they screen the call, and it's like, oh, it's just me. They never think to say, well, maybe she needs me. So I had to let both of them know that, and I decided that I was terminating the relationship that we have because I no longer accept that. I know that I'm their mother and I'm going to always be there. But I want them to think about me and let them know that I need them just as much as they need me, and we should be more loving and caring. It's not just at Christmas time you should, show your love, but it's all through the year.
Well, what was their response when you terminated your relationship with your children?
Well, I didn't give one of them an opportunity to even respond, because it just annoyed me. Her response to me, and I have to accept it because she was being honest. She says, "Well, sometimes, mommy, I just don't feel like being bothered."
Yeah.
And that's her prerogative. But I also told her that I didn't want her to change because I was just now telling her. It has to come from her heart and something that she wants to do. Because you can't force people to care for you, no matter how nice you are to them.
Well, there's a question about it. See, the idea. First of all, your name is Beloved, right?
Yes.
So you're kind of saying to your kids, I want you to be love. I want you to be loving to me. I need your love. The question I would ask, if I were you, is the following. What is it about my phone call that makes you not want to take it? That's the question. And you could write that in a text or an email. Because if they could say to you what it is about the phone call that they don't want to take, then maybe you'll find out something. Maybe they'll say, whenever you call, you're always telling me that I have to do something or other. You know? What do you think? If you were them, and you would be your daughter, and I would ask you, and say, and I'm Beloved, and I said to you, what is it about me? What is it about you that you don't want to answer my call? What is it? Now, what would you say as my daughter if I'm Beloved?
I'm too strict, maybe, too opinionated.
Too opinionated. And too opinionated about what? You mean you get on the phone and you're judgmental? That's what they feel, like you're going to criticize them in some way?
Well, how can I put it? You're really giving me something to think about. And I hear what you're saying, but...
But, B, let me ask you. I'm asking you this question. It's not that you are too, it may be part of your beauty that you are this way and you are this critical person who's got critical evaluations, but if they don't want to hear it and it doesn't register the right way, they have no answer with you except to not answer your call. So maybe they're inviting you to go in through a different door.
Mm.
Maybe they're saying, hey, Ma, do it different with me. So you have to ask the question. Instead of being punitive and say, I cut you out of my life and I cut you out of my will, I'm not going to leave you the special glasses, instead of punishing them.
Well, and I appreciate what you're saying, but whatever it is about me, it doesn't hold when they're in trouble and they call me and I
of
give
course.
Them the best.
That's what a mother is for.
I mean, I'm holding the torch for them.
Of course.
But they don't respond.
But of course, they're children and you're the adult. Of course children don't pay off.
And I figured that cell phone out. I can't stand that cell phone. And yeah. They know that I don't like that cell phone.
Let me ask you something. Did you pay off your parents?
Excuse me?
Did you pay off your parents?
Did I pay them off?
In other words, when you grew up, did you give them as much attention as they gave you?
Well, they weren't around for me to do that.
Right, there's the answer. In other words, you had this one thing. They didn't give you anything. So you're this overabundant parent, which frequently happens.
Those are my girls.
No, they're not your girls. They're their girls.
I don't own them in a sense.
I know, but you hear it. You hear it. They're not your girls. I know what you're saying, and I respect you and all you do, and I'm saying, look, you may be a real powerful mother, and you may be the best person in the world to come to if the stuff hits the fan, but sometimes you got to back off, and sometimes you want me to welcome your call, and would it be nice if one day your daughter answers the phone and says, oh, I'm so glad it's you. And that's the thing you want to hunt for. What is it that makes them want to hear you? Tough stuff. But we take it on ourselves, you know. If we take it on ourselves, we wind up not blaming the world, and we wind up being closer. So please, go get your children who you've disowned and bring them back in the fold with an invitation.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling in, beloved. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. Yes.
Hi, this is Aida. How are you?
Hello, Aida.
Let me tell you something. This is so on the mark, this subject that you have, because I've been through what the woman that just spoke to you has been through, but what I have decided and realized is that when my children call, or my grandchildren, and I would say, how come you didn't call? You know, you didn't call me. It's been a week. They're not going to call me. They don't want to hear that. So what I do is I call my grandkids once a week. I just call them before I call you. And my message is, hey, how are you? This is Mima. Just checking in. Call you next week. Hope everything is fine. If you need me, give me a buzz or come over. Bye. That's it. That's all I tell
sure.
them.
Sure. And how do they respond to that?
Well, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Well, it doesn't matter to me if they respond or not. I just want them to know I'm here.
Well, I think they know you're there. I think you want to know that they're there.
Yes.
You see, what you got to get is, as a parent, as an aunt, as an uncle, as a grandparent.
Right.
Sometimes this is your affirmation of life. This is all you live for. So the most you're going to get for out of it is a little inkling. And you're doing it the way I want B-Love to do it. You're giving it to them in a way that makes it palatable for them.
Exactly, because I think as parents and grandparents, like the lady said, we do want them to call. We feel that when they call, other than to need something from us, we feel loved.
Yeah.
You know what? It is what it is. The thing is, for us, for me, speaking for myself, is they know I'm here. They know that every week I'm going to say, hey, how are you? And that's it.
And you see, part of the way the system works, the part of the way we were designed, is to grow up independent of our parents so that we could live our own lives.
Exactly.
So when a child moves away from you, and a grandchild, I could think of my friend with her, with Benjamin, you know, is her grandchild. When her grandchild grew up and he moved away from her, she felt the pain of it, even though she watches and says it's beautiful that he's growing up. But, oh, where's that little boy who used to light up every time he saw me?
Yeah, with grandchildren, it's a double whammy, at least as far as I was concerned, because if anything happens to them, you're suffering for your child. And you're suffering for their child, but you kind of have to keep hands off. You know, that's tough.
You know the secret. Yep. Absolutely.
You do it. And just to be quick, on the other issue of the saying hello and goodbye to your someone you're in a relationship with, my hubby and I, with my request, we have different separate bedrooms. And every morning is, hey, honey, and we kiss each other, good morning. And the same thing at night. We get together, and it's great.
It's a greeting. And so there's one where you take separate bedrooms.
Yeah.
And that brings you to having a greeting with each other, keeping everything alive.
And if I go, I usually leave to work early, or if he leaves early, we always leave each other a note. Always.
Let me ask you something. Where do you make love, in which room?
It's because he has a king-size bed. There's more room to romp around.
So you creep into his bed, and then you make love. And then what happens? You get up and go back to yours in the middle of the night?
No. We stay together. I come in usually Friday and Saturday night, and then we hang out the next morning after romping around. We read the newspaper, then we have a good breakfast. No, I don't leave.
So you stay when you're gonna when on a Friday or Saturday night, it's party night.
It is. And now if we're sick, then we respect that.
Yeah.
But, oh. And the funny thing is, when we go to vacation and everything, we will get separate beds, but usually only one is used.
The other one holds the suitcases.
You're absolutely right. The towels, you got it.
Aida, thanks for calling in. I have to be going. Thanks so much.
And you're welcome. Thank you. Keep on going, man.
Thank you. Well, our fun drive starts next week, so we're going to have an irregular schedule. We're not sure what it is. We'll try to post it on thepositivemind.com. We will not be with you tomorrow, Wednesday, because it is our third week of the month, which figures out according to WBAI some way. So, but don't miss that Radio Unnameable with Bob Fass. It's part of our history. We'll be back with you sometime next week, somehow, and all month with special events. Oh, send me an email, would you? At thepositivemind.com. Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at thepositivemind.com.
I know it's hard when you're down, and the bad times seem to follow you around.